You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I am Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jemp and Luke Cutfer.
Hello.
Hi, howdy.
This week we're talking about when weight won't worsen one's well-being. But first, a little Apple review. Ooh. This one says, great listening, it's 5 stars. And it goes on to say, my husband recommended this podcast to me because of me pursuing a conservation bio degree. And it's so informative and fun. Such a well-spoken group with good chemistry and great information. Highly recommend.
Thanks, husband, and also other person.
Yeah, shout out to the husband and you.
Thanks, husband and spouse.
Yay! Gender non-specific spouse.
We have actually now another question for you. So if you're listening on Apple or you're listening on Spotify or anywhere else, head to YouTube because we want you to answer this question in the comments. The question is, what is your height?
I found out yesterday that I'm an inch taller than I thought I was.
Oh, that's
really?
Nice.
Are you 5'9"?
I'm 5'10".
5'10".
But I thought it was 5'9" my whole life. And I was like, how tall am I? And I measured myself. I was 5'10". I was like, whoa.
Look at you. You're above average.
Mind blown.
Above average man over here. Look at that.
I mean, I've always thought myself of that, just not in the height way.
Love it when you find an extra.
Well, actually, we'll be talking about my height in a little bit. But let's actually get into this episode. So, obesity is something that we're all very aware of. It's labeled as a public health crisis. It's been linked to heart disease, diabetes, and other issues. And the overwhelming message that's being sent is that fat is bad. However, the picture might not be as clear as this message may make one think. This week, we'll be talking about the obesity paradox.
Ooh, very good.
Paradox.
Yeah, right? So, first off, before we get into the obesity paradox, before you can understand what that is, you gotta understand obesity. So, what is obesity? Do either of you know what obesity is?
It's a certain level of BMI. Mm. So, like, there's a BMI goes like underweight, like standard. Is it called normal?
Is it defined it's by the healthy. BMI? Because I thought it was the other way.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I'm glad that you both have said what you've said, because that means that we've got an opportunity to learn, which is great.
Okay,
right?
So we basically messed up, and now
No.
I'm glad you guys are stupid, because now you can learn.
Because I had similar sort of, not even necessarily misconceptions, I had similar ideas about what obesity was in regards to BMI and all of that stuff, because it's not taught, you know, the message isn't conveyed very well. And you're both kind of right, just not 100%.
Yeah.
So, obesity, according to the World Health Organization, and this is a quote, abnormal or excessive fat accumulation that presents a risk to health. That is what obesity is. So, usually sort of, I guess, estimated or loosely defined based on BMI. We'll get into what BMI is specifically in a little bit, but all you need to know for now is that BMI is just a way of gauging whether someone is over, under, or of average weight, generally spoken about as being a healthy weight. It is important to note, though, that BMI isn't used to diagnose obesity, and again, we'll get to why that is in a little bit, but usually, if we want to know the sort of BMI ranges, 18.5 to 24.9 means you're a healthy weight, and so BMI is just, it's usually used as a sort of dimensionless number. There are units to BMI. I'll get into what the units are later, but it's given without units. It's just a number generally. So 18.5, 24.9 means you're a healthy weight usually. this is how BMI is kind of described, right? So I'm going to say healthy weight when it says this, even though it may not technically be healthy. Whatever, we'll get to that in a minute. So 18.5 to 24.9 is deemed a sort of healthy weight. 25.5 to 29.9 means you're overweight. 30 to 39.9 means you're obese. And 40 or above means you're severely obese. Obviously, under 18.5 would mean that you're underweight as well. Again, according to the World Health Organization, they say over 4 million people dying each year as a result of being overweight or obese in 2017, according to the global burden of disease. So what I'm pointing out here is that there are deaths that are linked to obesity, you know, over 4 million people dying each year linked to obesity. So how prevalent is obesity in the UK? How would you, like, how many would you, people in the UK would you guess?
Okay, obesity.
Adults and then kids.
I mean, I heard a statistic first, just to get us started, is like that something like 60% of the UK is deemed overweight by BMI, or is that 60% of America is deemed overweight by BMI? I can't remember, but like a shocking amount of people are deemed overweight by BMI. That doesn't necessarily, like you say, equate to health, but yeah. Obese, I would maybe go to like 15%.
I've heard like one in three or somewhere around there.
Well, it's one in four actually. So one in four adults in the UK, this is an estimate, right? Yeah. Because it's hard to get actual numbers on obesity. So an estimate of one in four adults in the UK are obese, and one in five children aged 10 to 11 are obese in the UK. According to the World Health Organization, this is all the where all the sort of worldwide information is coming from. Worldwide obesity has nearly tripled since 1975. And in 2016, over 1.9 billion adults, so 18 and up, they were overweight. So of that group, over 650 million were obese. So that's the kind of numbers that we're looking at, right? So 1.9 billion adults are deemed overweight. And of those, over 650 million are deemed obese. Now, obviously, being overweight doesn't necessarily mean that you're like really unhealthy or even like particularly unhealthy at all. This is, when we talk about BMI, there are difficulties with it. And again, we'll get to that in a bit. So 39 million children under the age of five were overweight or obese in 2020. And most of the world's population live in countries where overweight and obesity kills more people than underweight. So, you know, obviously being overweight is not necessarily healthy. And being underweight is not necessarily healthy. Being underweight can absolutely kill you. Being sort of severely overweight could also kill you, right? It is better to be in a sort of healthy median range. And generally that comes through like sort of physical activity, regular physical activity, and eating a sort of balanced diet, right? But in most countries, most of the world's population rather live in countries where sort of overweight and obesity kills more than underweight. So over 340 million children and adolescents between the ages of 5 to 19 were overweight or obese in 2016. It's from sort of 1975 to 2016, the prevalence rose from 4% to 18% globally in children and adolescents. So in 1975, 4% of kids and teens essentially were overweight or obese. And in 2016, that had risen to 18%.
Wow.
Yeah. Another quote from the World Health Organization: once considered a problem only in high-income countries, overweight and obesity are now dramatically on the rise in low- and middle-income countries, particularly in urban settings. The vast majority of overweight or obese children live in developing countries where the rate of increase has been more than 30% higher than that of developed countries. So globally, there are more people who are obese than underweight. We've kind of spoken about that already. But that happens in every single region apart from parts of sub-Saharan Africa and Asia. Just to give you an idea of like of where that goes, because often when we start talking about, you know, people being overweight or obese, obviously then the conversation comes in, well, you know, being overweight doesn't necessarily make you unhealthy. And we never talk about being underweight and how unhealthy that can be, or how you can be unhealthy at a sort of, you know, a healthy weight. Yeah. So the reason that we talk more about overweight and obesity is obviously because, you know, that is killing more people are dying from complications related to that than people are dying from complications related to being underweight, right? And obviously if you're a healthy weight and have, you know, and have health issues, that they may not be related to your weight, right? This is the idea of kind of decoupling the, you want to kind of decouple, you know,
being a healthy weight doesn't mean you're healthy.
Yeah.
Just you want to a healthy weight.
Yeah. Exactly. Right?
You get other things going on.
What it means is that your weight, like, you know, the adipose tissue, the fat tissue in your body is not likely posing an issue, right? That is what that means, yeah. A healthy weight. That doesn't necessarily mean healthy.
You are healthy.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
So what causes obesity, right? In the simplest, absolute simplest sense, it is an imbalance between the calories consumed and the energy expended. And I have one question for you both. What is a calorie?
Oh, it's a unit of energy?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a unit of energy. So people don't generally know what calories are, so that's why I like to talk kind of a little bit more in depth about what they are specifically, just so that we're all on the same page. Mm-hmm. A calorie is not a thing in food.
Yes.
Yep. If you tear apart your chocolate bar, you will not find any little calories sitting in there, because calories don't exist as things. Mm-hmm. Calories are like meters, or like kilograms, or... I don't know, some other unit of measurement, right? That's all they are. They are a measurement of energy, right? You could switch calorie into joules, which is another measurement of energy, right? A calorie isn't a thing, essentially. It's just however many calories something has is how much energy that it has. That is all that is. So what that means is that if we reduce it right down to the most basic sense, obesity is caused by an imbalance between your energy intake and your energy output. So if you're taking in more energy than you're expending, mm-hmm. so if you're eating more than you are sort of like, you know, exercising or walking sort of off or using, essentially, if you're eating more energy than you're using, then that energy is going to be stored, and your body's storage system for energy is fat, right? So that's why sort of eating more than you use results in sort of weight gain. Mm-hmm. According to the World Health Organization, again, globally, there has been an increased intake in energy-dense foods that are high in fat and sugars, and an increase in physical inactivity due to increasingly sedentary nature of many forms of work, changing modes of transportation, and increasing urbanization. So when I say it in the most basic sense, obesity is caused by, you know, eating more than you're using. That's not to say that if you see someone that's obese, that you can be like, ah, yes, you have chosen to eat more, and therefore you are. There are many other sort of factors at play, you know, like genetics, medications, health, disability, wealth, all of these sorts of things, right? Because wealth can affect your access to certain foods, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and genetics can influence, you know, your appetite and what kind of foods you gravitate towards, and all of the, and so many other things. Medications can impact you, you know, can impact you and cause you to gain weight or lose weight, or you know, disability can also be like, you know, can affect in terms of like, it can affect your level of activity, it can affect your appetite, your diet, all of these sorts of things, right? So there are so many factors at play, but it is still an indisputable fact, and like quite literally a law of thermodynamics, that you cannot gain weight without consuming more energy than you exert. And I feel that's very important to point out, because that is something that people kind of they kind of overlook or don't talk about. And this isn't to say that, you know, like, if you are like, and I want to be very clear here, I'm gonna have to say this up top, being overweight or obese or fat or any of these things, it doesn't reflect on you as a person at all. It doesn't reflect on you and your choices. That's like silly, like fat phobic stuff, obviously. What I'm saying here is not it is the individual's like choice to eat more, or the individual's choice to have more energy, consume more energy than they expend, that causes their obesity. What I'm saying is that there are all these other factors. But if we're being like sort of very specific about the mechanism that causes this, it is literally just more energy in than out.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Are there not any ways of gaining weight whereby, for example, your body's retaining more water, for example?
Yeah, but you wouldn't be getting fat.
Right. Okay.
You know, like, you think about it this way. Your body can only retain so much water. Like, obviously, this is why we talk about weight.
I don't know the different types of fat and how fat binds and all those kind of things. I don't know it. I'm asking this question.
No. Yeah, absolutely. So that it's a great question. And this is the thing here. We talk about weight, and generally when we talk about weight, we mean fat, because the most common way for someone to have excess, like sort of, I mean, to weigh more is to have excess fat on their body, right? Yeah. And weigh more in comparison to someone of the same sort of height as them, right? Or build or whatever. So, yeah, you can't gain weight without consuming more energy than you expend. Like, think about, like, it is physically impossible to make fat if you do not have excess energy, because where is the fat coming from? Do you know what I mean? Like, because fat is an energy store, so yeah. Where is the energy coming from? You can't, your weight fluctuates on the daily for so many different reasons, because obviously there's more than just fat in your body. You've got bones, you've got muscle, there is water in your body, and so water weight can change how your face looks. Like, I weigh myself in the morning for the gym before I've eaten, for the very specific reason that it is the most accurate I can be to have a clear picture of trends.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if I don't, I'm like, okay, well, how much water have I drank? How much water am I retaining? And like, my weight will change based on drinking alcohol, because it messes with your water retention. It changes how much you weigh based on water retention, right?
Yeah.
And there's all of these different factors. Like, I can gain muscle, I can lose muscle. But what I'm saying here is that it is impossible to have excess fat without having an excess of energy intake, right?
Yeah, of course. I guess this comes from two things. Firstly, me not understanding how fat is built. That's fine. Like, I don't, because you don't, for example, I know you don't get fat necessarily from, I mean, get fat on your body from eating fat in foods. Like, you get it from eating sugar in foods and carbohydrates in foods and all those kind of things as well, which are turned into fat.
And proteins.
And also water binding with those things in some process. I can't remember the details. But also, when you're saying, you can't gain fat without eating excess calories, but that, I trust that you know the difference between that and you can't gain weight without eating excess calories. Mm-hmm. I trust you know what the difference is, but I think that most myself included, don't know the difference.
No, thank you very much for pointing that out. Absolutely, yeah. When this is the difficulty with the way that we talk about things, right? Because we use weight as a euphemism for fat, and it's so ingrained that even this, where I'm very particular about the words that I choose, my brain will pull out the word weight and use it. You know what I mean? And I won't even notice. And bear in mind, I am so particular about the way that I word things on this podcast.
Yes.
So often. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, you could technically gain weight in other ways without eating an excess of energy, like, you know, water weight and stuff like that. But we're talking about like sort of consistent, sustained excess weight. Like, you couldn't raise your water weight so much that you verge into obesity, you know, from a healthy weight is my point, right?
Yeah, sure.
But the flip side of that as well, right, is that you literally cannot lose weight without being in, you cannot lose fat, sorry, without being in an energy deficit. You can gain protein, you can gain muscle without being in an energy surplus, and you can gain muscle whilst being in an energy deficit, because muscle is made out of protein, right? So all you need to do is eat a ton of protein. Like, I eat a ton of protein to gain muscle and to sustain muscle, right? So, it's difficult if you've got sort of no conception of any of these things, but your body is made out of a lot of different parts, and we're going to simplify it down here, right? Fat does not come from fat in foods.
Yes.
Fat in your body, adipose tissue, all of that stuff, that comes from energy. And you get energy from, like, lots of different food groups. You get energy from carbohydrates, you know, which is sugars and starches and that sort of stuff. You get energy from proteins. You get energy from fats. The reason that people point out fats as being, like, you know, this will make you gain fat, is because fats just have a ton of energy in them.
Yeah.
Like, they are very energy dense.
Insane.
They're more energy dense than carbohydrates. And what I mean by that is that if you have the same sort of amount of fat as you do carbohydrate, like the same weight, you will have more energy in the fat. And that's why fat is a great energy store, because, you know, it's got a high energy density, right? So you can store a lot of energy with like less mass, essentially, right? That's probably one of the reasons that your body stores excess energy as fat rather than, you know, storing it as rather than storing it as a sort of carbohydrate.
Yeah.
You know, and this is, again, as I said, long-term storage. Yes, as bread, right? There you go.
You have a little bread machine in your tummy.
So, again, it's not to say that obesity is caused by people choosing to eat too much. That'd be like saying that addiction is caused by people choosing to do drugs too much. It's just like a gross oversimplification, right? Like, that's not what I'm saying. I need to be clear about many things here.
I did drugs too much.
Because
no other factors were involved.
I feel like when it comes to body positivity and sort of anti-fat phobia, there's a lot of trepidation about talking about certain things because there's misinformation out there and all that sort of stuff. And I think it is important to quite explicitly say, right, that yes, you cannot be a certain weight without, you cannot like grow to a certain weight without excess energy input, right? That's just not possible. Like, thermodynamically, not possible. You'd be breaking the laws of physics. You'd win a Nobel Prize. However, that also doesn't mean that people choose to be obese, but also that doesn't mean, none of this means that being obese is like morally bad or anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mean you're a bad person or you've made bad choices. Like that's why I'm kind of relating it to addiction. It's something that can be unhealthy for you, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's something that could be like out of your control. But it also isn't something that devalues you as a human person, right?
It also doesn't mean that making someone feel bad about that is an effective way of making them not bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree.
That's fair.
I think you've made a very, sound point. No, I agree. So, what is the problem with obesity? So, like, is there actually any issue with being obese? So, of course, you can't absolutely tell someone's health just by looking at their weight. We've spoken about that before. For one thing, you can be unhealthy anyway, as I've mentioned. However, and this is from a paper called Obesity, Paradox, and Aging from 2019, and this is in Eating and Weight Disorders, Studies on Anorexia, Bulimia, and Obesity. It says, surrounding the critical organs of the body, visceral fat stimulates inflammatory processes, constituting an increasingly serious risk factor for cardiovascular diseases and diabetes. Now, what visceral fat is, it's fat that surrounds your organs.
Can't see it.
You can't see it. Mm. Now, you are more likely to have higher levels of visceral fat if you're obese, right? If you've got excess sort of body fat elsewhere, you're more likely to have higher levels of visceral fat. That's not an exact one-to-one. You could have high levels of visceral fat at a healthy, like a sort of healthier weight, right? It's not quite as simple as there is more fat on your body, therefore you definitely have so much of it, like an unbelievable amount of it, like surrounding your organs. Granted, generally that is the case. Like, generally that is the case, but also there could be outliers in other situations, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to quickly touch on this because people say often, right, you can't tell someone's health just by looking at their weight. And while that is true, that is not quite the same as saying that being obese has no effect on your health or anything like that, right? Like, there's a lot of weird sort of, I think, mental gymnastics people do to kind of not avoid fat phobia, but to sort of say, like, oh, we should treat these people as people. And to treat these people as people, we need to say that we need to disregard all of this stuff. We need to say that being obese is healthy and blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, I think that the fat phobics use that science as like a justification for their fat phobia as well, as opposed to just they want to be mean to fat people. They go, oh, but look, I'm backed by the science. I am correct that this person is unhealthy. And then they make the jump to then being mean to them because of that, which obviously is a stupid jump to make. And so, yeah, it's almost like the anti-fat phobia people saying, like, sort of to a certain extent, bring down or talking down a little bit the relevance of the genuine health risks of being overweight or being obese is a response to the fact that fat phobics use the science to justify being fat phobic.
Absolutely. Like, I totally understand why and where it comes from.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that you don't need to downplay it to give people basic human respect, right? Like, you can respect people and not sort of say, yes, this is an absolutely 100% healthy thing. It has no impact on, like, you know, it does have an impact on your health. And there are people that could be healthier than someone that is of a healthy weight, despite, you know, being of a higher weight than them, right? That is the case. That is true, right? But it's not something that you should sort of, it's not something you sort of build from, is what, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the rule. Those would be the exceptions to the rule. But even then, the rule of obesity being unhealthy is not so much a rule as a trend that we see. Do you know what I mean? Because there are obviously individuals in there, and there are so many factors at play. And I guess excess body fat is just a way to be like, okay, if there's excess body fat, you are more likely to have this cluster of other things. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's why we kind of talk about it the way that we do. Obviously, again, fat phobia, bad. Treating fat people, bad. Bad.
Mm.
Like, none of this should have any impact on, I guess, how, like, yeah, the human respect you give to people. You know what I mean? That, I just want to be clear, because it's very difficult to talk about this stuff and not have people sort of come away from it thinking like, oh, you're trying to say this and that. I just need to be absolutely 100% clear on this. Mm-hmm. So from the NHS, they say that the day-to-day problems related with obesity can include breathlessness, increased sweating, snoring, difficulty doing physical activity, often feeling very tired, joint or back pain, low confidence and self-esteem, feeling isolated, and the psychological problems associated with being obese can also affect your relationships with family and friends and may lead to depression. I found it interesting to talk about the last few there, low confidence and self-esteem, feeling isolated and you know, having issues with family and friends, like relationships and depression, because those aren't problems with being obese. Those are problems with how people treat people that are obese.
Treat you for being obese. Yeah,
that's like yes. Mm. Some of the day to day problems related to being black are feeling isolated and finding burning crosses on your lawn.
That's a symptom.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, like, it's odd that that's listed there. I mean, it is true.
Yeah,
it's just the framing of it is odd.
Yeah,
you know, listing low confidence, self esteem, and feeling isolated, and problems with family and friends that can lead to depression. Listing that alongside like joint and back pain and feeling tired, which are things that like you could take an obese person and put them into a new society on an alien planet where they're fully accepted and loved and blah blah blah, right? And they would still have breathlessness and increased sweating and sorry, all of those other things.
Yeah.
So it's weird to put things that stem from societal issues right next to things that are like inherent to obesity itself. And so also on top of that, being obese can also increase your risk of developing many potential serious health conditions, including, and again, this is all from the NHS, including type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and atherosclerosis, which is where like fat deposits narrow your arteries and sort of solidify them, which can lead to coronary heart disease and stroke, asthma, metabolic syndrome, which is a combination of diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity, several types of cancer, including bowel cancer, breast cancer, womb cancer, gastroesophageal reflux disease, which is GORD, where stomach acid leaks out of the stomach and into the gullet, gallstones, reduced fertility, osteoarthritis, which is stiffness and pain in your joints, sleep apnea, which causes interrupted breathing during sleep, which can lead to daytime sleepiness with an increased risk of like road traffic collisions and a greater risk of diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease, liver disease and kidney disease, pregnancy complications such as gestational diabetes or preeclampsia, which is when a person experiences a potentially dangerous rise in blood pressure during pregnancy. Now, as I said, obesity, which, to be honest, the definition that we use for obesity, right, which is abnormal or excessive fat accumulation that presents a risk to health, by that logic, right, you can be, you can have a lot of fat in your body and it, like, be, like, healthier and not posing a risk to your health and technically not be obese, right? So these, you could see how obesity is, like, basically using excess fat as a marker for all of these other sorts of things, because having excess fat in your body can cause these sorts of problems. Now, bear in mind, you can get you could get diabetes, you could have high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and you can have asthma and all of these other things, right? At a healthy weight, you could have all those when you're underweight. You could have all of that sort of stuff, right? But the thing is that obesity, as far as we're aware, seems to increase your risk of these things, right? Obesity can also reduce your life expectancy by an average of 3 to 10 years, depending on how severe it is. And it's also estimated that obesity and being overweight contribute to at least 1 in every 13 deaths in Europe.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's lots. So that is an overview on obesity. Now, way back at the start of the episode, I don't know if you can remember, way back then, I also mentioned BMI, right?
Yeah.
And I said we'd talk a little bit more about BMI. So we know what obesity is. Let's delve a little bit more into BMI and the issues with it. So first off, what is BMI? It's body mass index. It is basically just a measurement of, it's a measurement of, you know, your weight compared to your height, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So it's calculated by dividing your weight in kilograms by the square of your height in meters. You could also think of that as dividing your weight in kilograms by your height in meters, and then dividing the answer that you get from that by your height in meters again. So, for example, if you were to weigh 100 kilograms and you were gosh, let's just do this simply. You were 2 meters tall. You could divide 100 by 2 squared, which is 4. Yeah. So divide 100 by 4, BMI of 25. Mm-hmm. Or you could divide 100 by 2, you got 50, and then divide it by 2 again, 25.
Yeah.
Right? Same answer. Gotcha. Right? It's just easier to think of it as being squared. So obviously the units for BMI, the units which are never shown, would be kilograms over meters squared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which looks like it's like, which almost looks like it's, you know, pressure, right?
Yeah.
Kilograms per meter squared. But it's not. That's not what it is. So what are the issues with BMI? Do you know any issues with BMI?
Well, the biggest one is if you're really muscly, then you get a very inaccurate reading relative to like something like obesity, because muscle weighs a lot more than fat does. And so if you've got loads of muscles, you're going to look like you're overweight or obese. Mm-hmm. When actually you're just swole.
Yeah, absolutely. So muscle has a higher density than fat. Like muscle tissue has a higher density than fat tissue. And what that means is that for every, like, you know, whatever volume you've got of muscle. So let's say you have 1 cup of muscle, a single cup of muscle, and you have also a single cup of fat. Now, those are the same volume, right? They occupy the same space. They fill the cup up exactly the same as each other.
Yeah.
But you put them on the scales.
The muscle is heavier.
The muscle is going to be heavier than the fat.
Overweight.
Because the muscle is more dense, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. BMI, and it's not just having excess muscle and all that sort of thing. BMI doesn't give you a picture, a clear picture of someone, you know, and their weight and their fat tissue and their other tissues in the body. BMI tells you someone's weight in relation to their height. Someone can have a higher weight through having higher muscle mass. Mm-hmm. They can have a lower weight from having, like, you know, low fat mass and low muscle mass. And, you know, they could also, like, have visceral fat.
Yeah.
But still, like, a sort of lower sort of body fat mass, right? There are so many different factors involved in sort of health and weight and fat and other tissues. And BMI just says, nah, weight and height. It is useful. Don't get me wrong. BMI is pretty bloody useful. It's usually pretty good at giving you an estimate, right? Like in terms of when I say it's useful, what I mean is that it's got its limitations, but it can be useful when you take into account those limitations, right? The only problem is when you don't take into account those limitations, then you're basically trying to look at the wrong thing, right? So BMI can definitely answer a question for you, but if you use it as the answer to a different question, it's not going to be appropriate, right? So BMI itself isn't the problem, I don't think. I would say using BMI the way that we use it is definitely a problem. If you want just like a roughly where are people in terms of like their body weight, BMI is solid.
If they're not like an athlete or if they're the Rock.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. But it's not even just like at extremes like that, you know? Like even if you're tracking your own personal BMI, that could still, it could give you a false picture. In the same sense that, you know, how people will just weigh themselves on scales and they'll be like, oh man, I'm a kilogram heavier. That's bad. Like your weight can fluctuate.
What time of day is it?
Yeah. Your weight fluctuates throughout the day.
Yeah.
Your weight could be different because you've like had a big meal and there's lots of food in you, or it could be different because like any number of reasons, right? So let's use my own BMI as an example.
Okay.
So I have all of these stats I'm about to share with you tracked because I go to a gym that's got a machine called a body tracks machine, not a spawn. Basically, it uses electricity, It basically measures the resistance of your body, and also it measures your weight to kind of estimate your body composition, right? So these numbers aren't going to be super accurate. Body tracks machines, like the body tracks machine I use, it's good for showing trends, right? That's why I use it for. That's why I do it so regularly, because I want to see the change in my body composition over time. I find it interesting and I find it useful. It's my thing. You don't have to do it. Just don't be down in the comments telling me that I shouldn't be caring about it, because it's my body. Leave me alone. there's a good degree of error within these body tracks readings. However, they should be relatively fine for this discussion, right? So I'm just going to read you through a few different data points here. I've got four. I'm pretty sure I've got four. So September 2020, that was my lowest muscle mass on this sort of a chart that I've got. And that goes back to sometime in, I think, 2020, maybe 2019. So my height is 185 centimeters. It was consistent. It's going to be that all the time. So we can just skip past my height. So height is 185 centimeters. At that point, I weighed 93.9 kilograms. My fat percentage was 24.2%. percent, which means that I have 22.7 kilograms of fat on my body and 67.7 grams of muscle. That left me a BMI of 27.4. Now, October 2020, that was my lowest weight. That's the lowest weight I've had that I've tracked in the past sort of 2 years. My height was the same, as said. I was 91.9 kilograms. My fat percentage was 22.2%. So as you can see, it's only 2% off that lowest muscle one there, even though I was, I was a couple kilograms lighter. My fat percentage was 22%, as I said, which meant I had 20.4 grams kilograms of fat and 68 kilograms of muscle. I know these are a lot of numbers, but I'm just going to have to say them, and then we could switch to using the BMI and it'll be all right, right? My BMI was 26.8. So a good degree lower than a good degree lower, but not necessarily much difference in terms of body fat. And definitely, as you can see, 68 kilograms of muscle versus 67.7 kilograms of muscle.
Marginal for error there.
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, like taking into account the error, like there wasn't too much of a difference there. So moving on, January 2022, so start of this year, was my highest muscle mass that I tracked. I weighed, though, 100.6 kilograms. My body fat percentage was 24%, which left me at 24.1 kilograms of body fat, and my muscle was 72.7 kilograms. And my BMI was 29.3, obviously much higher. Mm-hmm. Got more muscle, I've got more fat, slightly. So, higher BMI. Now, in May of 2022, of this year, which is when I felt the healthiest that I've felt in the past 2 years, my height was the same. My weight was 94.7 kilograms. My fat percentage was 19.6%, which left me at 18.6 kilograms of fat and 72.4 kilograms of muscle. My BMI was 27.6. So
drop again.
Yeah. So my BMI, 27.6, is higher than when I was at my lowest muscle. It's also higher than when I was at my lowest weight.
Yeah.
But it's when I felt the healthiest, and it's when I was, I mean, overall healthier. I had like a lower body fat percentage, 19.6% there. That was like my lowest body fat percentage of all of these. I'm fairly sure. Yeah, my lowest body fat percentage of all of these. But I had a higher BMI. That doesn't really give you a good picture, right? If we just track my BMI over the past couple years, I'm looking at my BMI and I'm like, oh, my BMI is actually higher than it was when I started going to the gym regularly. And yet I feel healthier and look very different, and what is going on, right? Like, and obviously you can't necessarily track health based on, body fat percentage, but I find generally when I've got, when my body fat percentage goes down and my muscle mass goes up, I feel better, I think I look better, and things are easier. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel healthier generally, just in my body, all of that sort of stuff outside of the physical thing. But it gives you an image there, right? Like, my BMI just is going all over the shop and is not really tracking with my overall physical health, right? Or even like,
or your perceived physical health,
or my perceived physical health, or even like the body fat percentage, which is what BMI is being used to estimate here, right? So it's not really the best tool for it. And that's why I would say, if you're, if you're tracking your weight, you're tracking your BMI, and you've got like negative feelings towards it, those numbers are not going to help you at all. Like, they're not, like, if your weight is going up, that doesn't mean that you're gaining fat. If your weight's going down, doesn't mean that you're losing fat. You shouldn't use these numbers if you want to have an accurate picture of your body composition. But also, like, really, you shouldn't be tracking those numbers in that sort of negative way anyway. All I'm saying is, you're trying to track your weight sort of healthily, because there are any number of like healthy reasons to track one's weight and body composition. You shouldn't be tracking your weight. You should be tracking your body composition and weight and all of these other different sort of factors. It's the same as, like, if you're going to try and look at your food intake, look at your diet, you don't want to just look at calories, right? Because like you could have a cookie and an avocado have the exact same like number of calories, the same sort of fat content roughly. The avocado has more nutrients and the cookie is like a party in your mouth. There are like loads more factors at play.
Avocado is a party in my mouth to me.
Look, I like an avocado, don't get me wrong, I love an avocado, but like, a cookie is a very different experience from avocado. That's all I'm saying.
So are you going to tell us that there is some kind of magical new measurement that is a ratio between height and weight and body fat percentage and muscle mass and all these things that gives a much better clearer image or clearer picture of your overall health.
There's not really like a new sort of number or way of measuring. I guess the point is more that you can't sort of bring all of that information together into one single number, right? Yeah. Right? You know, it's really, really bloody difficult. If you want to understand, you know, if you've got a balanced diet, if you've got a nutritious, healthy diet, you got to look at more factors than just calories, because all that's telling you is how much energy is going into your body. You could be eating a perfectly healthy number of calories and have no nutrition whatsoever, right? Like, yes. Like you could have like, or you could have, you could, okay, put it this way, right? You could have a very healthy number of calories and no protein. Yeah. Just like basically no protein in your diet, and you look at calories, so I'm doing well, but you're like feeling like lethargic and weak and all of that stuff, and you're like, why? Because you don't have enough protein.
But I've got the calories.
Exactly. And it you know,
like when James Blunt ate nothing but meat to piss off his vegan friends, and then he got scurvy because he didn't have any vitamin C.
Wait, James Blunt? I thought that was Jordan Peterson.
No, that's James Blunt.
It was both of them.
Was it both of them? Yeah. I don't think he got scurvy.
I think Jordan Peterson.
But James Blunt got scurvy.
Actually got scurvy.
I mean, he says
to
he
avoid
got scurvy,
well yeah. To avoid that, you would have to eat like a lot of different parts
steak
of the animal.
Steak and orange juice.
No, you could. That would be a good way. But I mean, the way that you avoid that is by eating just every part of the animal. Yeah. That's how, obviously, carnivores get all of their nutrients. Just
carnivores such as just
I thought he had spinach as well, though.
Was it spinach?
He had spinach or
something. Yeah. Jesus. There's a bit of vitamin C in spinach.
So, yeah. My point is that using BMI to track your health is just ridiculous, and using your weight, just that single number to track your overall health, again, is ridiculous. It's just, it's not the way to live a healthy life. I mean, for one thing, you can live a healthy life without tracking either of these things. Absolutely, right? But if you want to track, or you know, if you need to track, you know, because you have issues with sort of like your food intake or whatever, and tracking helps you do that, don't just track your weight and calories. Like, for the love of God, do not do that, because that is a very surefire way into being unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, either being like, you could be like severely could lead you to being severely underweight, right? Like, it's not the healthy thing to do. I'm not saying everyone should track everything. I think people should be informed on what they're eating. They should have a general like idea, like for example when I found out that mushrooms, whilst they're high in protein, they are mostly water, and so an entire thing of mushrooms that you get, an entire 300 grams of mushrooms has 24 bloody calories in it. Like, you should know what you're eating, because otherwise you'll be like, you won't get, like, for example, if you're like a vegan, you're like, I'm gonna have a ton of mushrooms, and you have like a box upon box and that's your main protein source and that's your main part of your meal, and you're only getting like 100 calories worth out of four bloody punnets of mushrooms, that's not gonna be healthy, right? It's gonna lead you to being underweight and you don't know why.
Yeah,
so I think we should be informed.
Which is what happened to me when I first went vegan.
Really?
I didn't have a clue what I was doing, and I was very underweight.
That's why veganism is hard to move into. Yeah. Like, that's why people find it difficult, because they don't have any knowledge of nutrition whatsoever. Yeah. And they generally don't need to, because you could probably get by on like protein and stuff just by eating like meat, you know.
Eggs, chicken.
Yeah. Sort yeah. of that, all yeah. that. It gives you could get away with it. You won't be like necessarily 100%, but you can get away with it pretty easily. You know, I just think that like we should all know more about food, coupled obviously right with education and support and prevention for, you know, eating disorders and all that sort of stuff. Absolutely. But I don't think the solution to this sort of eating disorder epidemic that we've got, or this sort of issue with you know, like with obesity and stuff, I don't think the solution to that is just saying ignore everything and just go for what you enjoy, because people need to have like a healthy balanced diet. Yeah. And you can't build a healthy balanced diet if you don't know what the diet's made of, right? Like, so back to BMI. Here's what the NHS says about BMI. It says that BMI uses your height and weight to work out if you're a healthy weight, underweight, or overweight. Your BMI result is not the perfect measure of your overall health. It can't tell if you're carrying too much fat, if you've got a lot of muscle. You could use your BMI result as a starting point for further discussion with your GP. The adult BMI doesn't take into account age, sex, or muscular build. And they go on to say that that means that like older adults can have healthy BMI and still have too much fat, because they tend to have more body fat than younger adults. Women can have a healthy BMI but still have too much fat, because women tend to have more body fat than men with the same BMI. And if you're from a black or ethnic minority group, you're at an increased risk of type 2 diabetes with a BMI of 23 or more. as you said, Luke, an athletic adult with a lot of muscle can have a high BMI but not be overweight. But obviously having a lot of muscle and low body fat can present its own issues. And this is the issue, right? If you see someone that's got a high BMI, they could be a bodybuilder that's got like a massive amount of muscle and like almost 0% body fat. They are going to have health issues because of that, but they are not going to be the same health issues as someone else with their same BMI, right? Like, I don't want you to come away from this thinking that I'm saying that overweight, unhealthy, that is sort of like overweight and fat, unhealthy, overweight and muscle, healthy, overweight and muscle, unhealthy also. The practices of getting to that point itself is like just stupidly unhealthy.
Yeah.
My point is that BMI is not an accurate picture of health and is not an accurate picture of, you know, how someone can be helped to improve their health. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
It sure is.
It is.
What are we advertising today? Well, I'll tell you what it is.
Please.
It's After Dark. I say brand new. It's our super secret, very special, exclusive show. Just because SciGuys has ended, it doesn't mean the conversation has. Why don't you let them know what After Dark is, guys?
It's basically an opportunity for us to talk on a wider range of topics. You might see in SciGuys occasionally we go on little tangents. Well, After Dark is one gigantic tangent where we talk about a subject and then the conversation kind of meanders, but then we try to create a holistic lesson or message at the end of the show.
Yeah, we were finding these tangents were happening anyway throughout the show. Some of them were a bit too long for a single episode, so we thought, you know, why not? Why don't we make a whole new podcast where we do just that?
So if your favorite part of SciGuys is the tangents, then absolutely you need to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys, the only place you can access After Dark. And as I said, just because SciGuys has ended, it doesn't mean the conversation has.
But it's a super secret show, so don't tell anybody. Shh.
No, tell everybody.
But don't tell anybody.
We want everyone to know.
No, don't do that. No, don't.
It's super secret, but we want everyone to know.
Tell everyone. Tell everyone about this. Okay, let's just start the show. So now we've gone through obesity and BMI, and let's get on to the obesity paradox. So.
Oh, yeah.
What is the obesity paradox?
Oh, God.
Don't worry, I'll tell you. In 1999... it was first sort of described, the phenomenon was first described in patients undergoing hemodialysis. Essentially, they looked at over 1,000 patients attending limited care hemodialysis, and they found that the one-year survival rate, so basically if you check back in a year and see how many of them are still alive, the survival rate was significantly higher with people that were overweight compared to people that were a normal weight or underweight. Now, the term obesity paradox was sort of coined in 2002 by Gruberg et al. In their paper that essentially described, and I'm just going to quote it here, to describe their counterintuitive finding that overweight and obese patients with coronary artery disease had better outcomes than their normal weight counterparts. That's from Obesity and Aging 2019. Now that's in the paper that's in the journal that I mentioned earlier, Eating and Weight Disorders. If you actually look into it, I'm just going to basically talk about it. The obesity paradox is essentially the idea that being overweight, being obese has a protective effect with some health conditions like coronary heart disease, I think some kinds of cancers, like I think some lung cancers, wow, and some renal cancers or some renal issues as well. So that's generally what the obesity paradox is. I mean, we can talk a little bit more about some other studies. So, you know, they found that obesity, hypertension and were all associated with improved survival among dialysis patients, and in chronic heart failure after acute myocardial infarction, in chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, in older nursing home residents, in peripheral arterial disease, in stroke and thromboembolism, and in post-operative complications during catheter ablation for atrial fibrillation and after cardiac surgery. Essentially, if you got like heart surgery or heart problems or, you know, some kinds of cancers, people have spotted a sort of a protective effect. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, they looked at, there's a meta-analysis as well of over 6 million cancer patients. Mm-hmm. This article is a preprint. It means it's not been peer-reviewed. It means that it can't be used to sort of influence medical practice, mm-hmm, or anything, because it's not been peer-reviewed. Yep. But I'm going to talk about it anyway, just with that caveat. Not been peer-reviewed. Preprint. Okay? and I'm just going to quote here, patients with breast and colorectal and uterine tumors were at increased risk of death. Conversely, obese with lung cancer, renal cell carcinoma, and melanoma survived longer than non-obese. Basically, it seems like obesity has a protective effect when it comes to renal cell carcinoma, so renal cancer, kidney cancers, lung cancers, and melanoma, skin cancers, right? And it goes on to say, in many cancer patients, obesity reduces survival and increases the risk of relapse. In lung cancer, renal cell carcinoma, and melanoma, obesity was protective in terms of outcome. More intensive follow-up, adequate dosing of oncological treatments, calories intake restrictions, physical activity, and monitoring of obesity-related complications are effective measures for reducing mortality in these subjects. Now, that is from Obesity Paradox in Patients with Cancer, a systematic review and meta-analysis of 6,320,365 patients.
Whoa.
Published in 2020. Wow. Now, that is an overview of the obesity paradox, right? It is the idea that obesity can have a protective effect with some cancers and heart conditions.
That's interesting.
But crucially, that wouldn't mean that if you got, say, lung cancer, a way to increase your survival rate would be to become obese.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Ooh. We'll get to that. Because the story of how I came across this kind of will probably highlight what I think of this whole sort of story, right? So I came across it on TikTok. Now,
right.
As you well know, often I will come across something on TikTok and I will bring it to this podcast because it just riles me up. That's honestly, I think, at least 20% of the After Dark episodes that we do. So it said that scientists found this obesity paradox and labeled it a paradox because they didn't want to admit that obesity, overweight, or a lot of fat is healthy and fine. And that's why they call it a paradox. I had an issue with that. Like, I saw the TikTok and I was like, this feels weird, right? Like, there's something, something seems like kind of off to me because it seems like there's information that's missing, right? And I'm not saying that, like, you know, I haven't heard of this, so it's not true. But I find it surprising and interesting, but also the way that the TikTok was framed came across as odd to me, right? It felt like there was more information there that I could find out. I was curious. I want to know more. You know, the explanation, obesity is protective and not unhealthy, scientists are just fat phobic, is like a really, really, it's a nice story. Like, it's a good, strong story when you're talking about like anti-fat phobia and stuff. Mm-hmm. But my question was like, does it actually hold up? Because not necessarily that I would want it to believe that it was true, but it is like an easy answer to the situation, right? Like, it is very much like a obesity isn't unhealthy, scientists and doctors are just fat phobic sort of thing. But I don't know. I thought that seemed a little unlikely, not like impossible, but I was like, okay, what else could be going on here? Let's explore the other explanations before we hop onto this one, because this is a big one, right? Yeah. My view of it was essentially, right, that I didn't immediately buy it, and it could have been entirely down to my own personal bias. Like, I straight away I thought that, but I thought that there were a good few possible explanations for the paradox. Like, they just came to me pretty quickly. Like, I had questions that I was like, well, what about this and this and this? So, you know how I operate. I tend not to just like accept information, particularly not that I get in a TikTok, but I also like try to not just outright dismiss information that sort of, you know, challenges me or makes me uncomfortable or, you know, challenges my worldview or contradicts something that I already believe to be factual, right? I don't want to just dismiss things. I want to look into them, right? I'm a curious person. That's why this podcast exists. So I went and decided to read more about this to see if there was actually any explanation. So before we get into the like potential explanations, I had a few that came to me when I first heard about this. What do you think could be an explanation for this? So like, let's say outside of the, what is sort of the reason for a protective effect of obesity, or, you know, a perceived protective effect of obesity?
Could it be, first one that springs to mind is that there was no information about whether when the person was diagnosed with, say, lung cancer, they were already obese.
Mm-hmm.
And so could it be that, for example, somebody gets lung cancer, they're worried about their health then more generally, and they quite drastically reduce their weight, which is also unhealthy,
right?
And they die from complications of like drastically changing their lifestyle.
Mm.
And the people who were obese and had lung cancer and stayed obese might not have drastically changed their lifestyle and so didn't die.
Yeah, an interesting one. Yeah, that sounds kind of similar to some ideas that like I initially came up with. Like, I just find it interesting that we were on kind of a similar track.
Okay.
I mean, the main one that came to me was that having more weight on your body would be useful. And this is what was kind of mentioned in the TikTok. It's useful if you're losing weight, right? If you lose weight through illness, if you have more weight on your body, you're less likely to go down to an unhealthy weight where you will die.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Like, obviously, like,
you got a bit longer.
Yeah. You got, exactly. You got more energy store to keep you going.
Yeah.
So that could be a reason for that. You know, there were a few other things that I thought of as well that kind of like that sort of informed, you know, what I was looking for initially.
Yeah.
That was way back like months ago. Long before that was like me deciding whether or not to do this as an episode. So when I sat down to do this episode, I tried real hard, right? I tried to be as unbiased as possible. Like my search terms, I tried to be like very neutral in terms of just looking up obesity paradox. Like with no other search terms, I was trying to just find obesity paradox, right? Because if you think about it, obesity paradox is a thing that's coined by people that believe that there's some seemingly paradoxical effect wherein obesity, something we view as being unhealthy and detrimental to health, can seemingly have a protective effect, right? So I was looking for that, and I really bloody struggled. I struggled so hard to find papers that were like supportive of the obesity paradox through like sort of data and evidence without any sort of confounding factors. We'll get into that in a sec. But first, let's just talk about the sort of the explanation that there sort of is no paradox, that being obese isn't necessarily unhealthy, right? So here's a quote. It says, body structure and body composition, increased body weight may hinder the metabolic consequences of diseases and of treatments by providing adequate muscle and adipose reserves. So essentially what that's saying is that more muscle and more fat in your body in that sense can sort of not, means that the sort of effect that diseases have on your body can be lessened just by the fact that you've got more, we've spoken about that, the fact you've got more weight, you've got more energy stores to go through. With cancer biology, obesity seems to be associated with lower stage diseases, smaller tumor size, and less aggressive biological subtypes. Moreover, overweight and obesity may positively influence treatment outcomes since excess adipose tissue affects pharmacokinetics of cancer treatment regimens whilst providing a nutritional supply to deal with surgical and anti-cancer treatments. Essentially, yeah, like, you've fat in your body can be protective. Like, okay, put it this way. I had rats. I knew the rats were ill and dying when they lost a lot of weight. The rats need to have a ton of weight, like rats carry like a lot of fat on their bodies because they need it, right? It is a healthy amount of fat, and having fat is useful because sometimes you're not going to be able to eat, or sometimes your body isn't going to be able to process the nutrients properly, all that sort of stuff, right? Having fat is useful. You need to have fat in your body. That is just a fact, right? It is unhealthy to have like too low of a body fat percentage, right? But clearly excess weight means excess energy reserves, and that could be useful when fighting an illness, right? That could be the explanation for this, but that's not necessarily the explanation that's posited in lots of papers, and that explanation doesn't necessarily explain absolutely everything in and of itself, right? Because by the logic of that explanation, it's then like, oh well, we should all just be overweight, and that way we'll be better off when it comes to, you know, having like dealing with heart disease or dealing with like, you know, heart surgery and all these sorts of things, right? But that doesn't really seem to be the case, right? Because I mean, for one thing, as we've spoken about, obesity can increase your chances of these things. So it's a question of like, does the protective effect of obesity, does it actually increase your, does, is it so protective that the increased chances of getting these things are negligible? Right? So let's move on to the other sort of explanations that talk about more why this isn't a paradox, why it's the sort of the problems with this theory, this sort of paradox idea, right? So first off is sort of errors or misrepresentations of data, right? So we've spoken about illness-related weight loss, right? That means that like essentially, depending on when you measure the person's weight, someone that was obese could appear to not be obese depending on when you've measured their weight due to weight loss due to the illness, right? And so the person, like, you know, like obesity wouldn't necessarily then have a protective effect because there are still obese people dying, they're just not being marked as obese because they've lost the weight due to the illness.
Yeah.
Right? There's also something called collider stratification bias. Do you want to take a guess on what that is?
No.
No.
So I'm just gonna read out a bit of a quote here, right? Because it's pretty understandable. It's a long quote, but I think it's going to help to understand totally what this is. Mm-hmm. So this is from The Obesity Paradox, May Not Be a Paradox at All, a paper from 2017 in the International Journal of Obesity. It is well documented that collider stratification bias can potentially reverse the direction of an effect, making a harmful exposure appear protective. Smoking is a known risk factor for renal cell carcinoma and mortality. In epidemiological terms, it is a strong confounder of this relationship. Only one of the studies included in the meta-analysis adjusted for smoking in its multivariate analysis. The explanation for why collider stratification bias occurs is as follows. Obese individuals have developed renal cell carcinoma because they are obese or because they smoke, while non-obese individuals must have developed renal cell carcinoma due to smoking, since in our simplified example, there are only two causes of RCC. Among individuals with RCC, obese individuals are less likely to be smokers, whilst non-obese individuals are more likely to be smokers. Smoking is a much stronger risk factor for RCC than obesity and is much more deadly. Therefore, among individuals with RCC, obesity may appear protective because its presence indicates the absence of a more harmful risk factor like smoking. So, just to explain that, what that means is essentially, if you've got something like renal cell carcinoma, RCC, if you've got something like that, let's say that there are two things that can cause it, obesity and smoking. Mm-hmm. But smoking causes it way more, right? So if you're not obese, right, it's far more likely that you have renal cell carcinoma because you're a smoker, which results in worse outcomes, right? Being a smoker results in worse outcomes. Now, there are kind of be obese people who are smokers also, right? And so they would potentially be more affected by it, right? But if you just look at something like obesity and you don't account for smoking, what you'll see is obese people and non-obese people. And the non-obese people will be faring worse. And because you're only looking at obesity, you can only conclude that it's because they're not obese. Whereas if you include smoking, you'd see that, the obese people that fared worse smoked. And the non-obese people that fared worse also smoked. Smoking is the cause of this. Right.
So in this situation, it would be that, for example, lung cancer can be caused by smoking, or it can be caused by obesity, or obesity might increase the risk of lung cancer. I think it might have been one you actually mentioned earlier on in the show. And so, because smoking and getting lung cancer is so much worse than being obese and getting lung cancer, it looks like of people who then get lung cancer, the obese people fare better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's just because they didn't smoke.
Yeah.
That's some of them did smoke, but...
Yeah.
Right.
So when it comes to sort of collider stratification bias, I've actually got another little explanation. This is from Science Daily in 2018. For instance, smoking changes the distribution of fat in the body. Smokers may have lower weight as smoking depresses appetites, and so BMI tends to be lower. Another reason could be that some people have existing but undiagnosed disease, which can often lower their weight but also make them more likely to die prematurely. You see, this is the thing. Like, this point is essentially that there are other factors that you are not looking at, and when you remove those factors, the picture looks like it's saying obesity is protective, but if you include those factors, that kind of falls away.
So you'd have to compare obese non-smokers to non-obese non-smokers who end up getting lung cancer in order to check whether there was a protective effect by being obese.
Or obese smokers versus non-obese smokers.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. And the issue is that a lot of these sort of studies on the obesity paradox, they look at their meta-analyses, which essentially means they're looking at lots of different studies. Now, that means that they are taking data from different experiments that they themselves did not necessarily run, which means that when you're pulling all that data together, the different experiments might have slightly different parameters, right? And you obviously adjust for that in your meta-analysis and all of that sort of stuff. But if those papers don't all include information on smokers and non-smokers and whatnot, you don't have that information when you're doing your meta-analysis, and so necessarily you don't have a picture of that, right? So all of these meta-analyses could be missing out key factors that, that actually have an influence. And that seems to be the case when you look at a lot of these, like a lot of papers that I've seen on the obesity paradox are literally just talking about the obesity paradox. And they're like, okay, this paper said this. When we actually look at the studies that they looked at, that seems to not be the case. Here's this other study that shows this sort of thing, right? Yeah. And this is really difficult and irritating for me, because it's like, it would be great to be, because we're often the very progressive, woke podcast, right? Where we're like, actually, look, your science is more progressive than you think. It agrees with this progressive viewpoint, right? And it would be a terribly progressive viewpoint to make or it would seem to be a terribly progressive viewpoint to make this sort of claim that obesity is entirely like kind of unlinked from health. And actually, obesity can be very healthy. And that's why we should treat obese people with respect. Now, I have problems with that on multiple fronts. One, I don't care if they're healthy or unhealthy. Like, treat them with respect anyway. Like, as the
yeah,
people,
where is this link between respect level and health?
It's I just don't an easy. But it's because
it's just so weird.
Fat phobes use health level. Use health as a reason, and so
but that's so
and so
stupid.
The most easy way to refute that is to say actually obese people are healthy, rather than make the argument that it doesn't matter whether they're healthy or not. You should still treat them nice, right? So I have issues with all that front, and it's like it's almost a little frustrating because I was like I wish there was something more there that we could kind of talk about and validate, you know, to some extent. This TikTok that I saw, and what I mean by that is that I wish that, you know, I could say, well, there's some weight to this, you know, this person, you know, this, there's some weight to this person saw this and blah blah blah, it's a bit up in the air, but it, as far as I'm aware, it seems as though the obesity paradox was suggested, and it's there's not really been much sort of support for it. There's not been much to back it up, and so it kind of sucks that this TikTok or this person is using the obesity paradox as part of their activism, because it just doesn't really add up.
And it just, you have to be really careful when you use something like that as part of your activism, because then if somebody refutes the thing you're using, they think they've refuted your activist point, which is to be respectful to people regardless of how big they are. And also it makes you look silly, and then by extension people use that to go, oh, so people who are activists are then silly.
Yeah, it's why I really dislike any sort of, I mean, I guess trans advocacy that focuses on brains and how trans people have brains of their sort of gender, you know what I mean, the gender that they're transitioning to. Because I mean, at best, I think from, you know, the episodes that we've done on this, the kind of reading that I've done on this, and I'm not a neuroscientist, I don't have a deep knowledge of brains, but from the reading that I've done, it seems as though our sort of knowledge, the studies that we've done on brains seem to have some bias to them. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, looking at male brains versus female brains, it's not, I don't think, as concrete as other things.
Yeah.
And so building trans advocacy on the idea that trans people are valid because they have the wrong brain, I don't understand. Trans people are valid because they are, like, they're people. Do you know what I mean? They're people who just want to live their lives and not harm other people, and just so that's where you should be the starting point from. You don't refute bigotry by saying, look, science says that actually your bigotry is wrong because of this factor. No, you say your bigotry is wrong because it is bigotry. You shouldn't be bigoted, even if trans people, like, you know, were just choosing to be a different gender. That is valid as well. That's fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, even if obesity, like, you know, was, like, even if obesity is, like, super, super incredibly unhealthy, like, it's the worst possible thing you could do for your health in all respects. Like, like, absolutely no questions. Being overweight means that you are unhealthy, right? Even if that was the case, you could still treat people with respect. That's why I wanted to bring up addiction earlier, because it's like, we should treat addicts with respect despite the fact that they're addicted, right? And addiction, we view that kind of as a disease, right? It has negative health implications, all that sort of stuff. But like, addicts are people, right? We should still treat them as people. And just because someone is addicted to something, it doesn't mean that we, like, you know, you don't see someone that's an addict of something and they're, you know, they're like, they're kind of what, like a role model. People are like, oh, disgusting. They're promoting addiction by being visible. Like, think about the number of celebrities that are avid users of drugs, right?
Yeah, sure.
You put a fat person on, you know, like a billboard or a magazine cover or whatever. It's like, you're promoting fatness and obesity, and it's bad. It's like, they're not. They're just kind of existing. Like, you're the one that's kind of thinking they're just kind of sitting there. You know what I mean? Like, I guess my point is to remove, like, when it comes to activism and advocacy, remove the idea that something needs to be healthy or something needs to be like, you know, scientifically like irrefutable for a person to be valid, like, or to for a person to have respect, like, just give them respect anyway, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, back to the obesity paradox, because there are some other problems with it, right? You know, I've spoken a little bit about, you know, collider stratification bias, which is where, to be super simple, there are just factors that they're not looking at. Those factors could be more sort of have more of an effect than the factor that you are looking at. There's also illness related weight loss, which we've touched on, and there's also underlying diseases that could be confounding factors for like multiple reasons. You know, here's a quote from a narrative review covering 72 papers from between 1999 to 2019 relating to the obesity paradox and aging. So a narrative review, by the way, is just basically someone is like, I looked at all of these and here is what I saw. It's not like hard numbers and data. It's like, here's what I saw.
Yeah.
This is me talking to you. And it's basically what we do on this podcast, right?
Right. Okay.
It says, the great number of biases and confounding factors, as mentioned above, makes the relation between BMI and mortality very complex, particularly in older subjects. At least the following points should be considered. Low weight and weight loss in the elderly could be signs of underlying diseases and often difficult to detect. Patients with a normal BMI and high WC may have lower lean mass, lower cardiorespiratory fitness together with higher visceral fat and ectopic fat deposition. At the same BMI, the ratio between lean to fat mass may be different, and this is particularly true in older ages. Also, presence of obesity makes the patients symptomatic for chronic conditions at earlier stages of the disease, and consequently, they could be treated earlier, more aggressively for coexisting diseases, for example, diabetes, than their normal, healthy weight counterparts. And it is indisputable that higher adiposity may confirm higher protection against catabolic stress by supplying nutritional reserve. What that's saying is, just to kind of break it down, is that low weight or weight loss in the elderly could mean an underlying condition that is hard to see or hard to treat. If you've got a normal BMI, you could still have like a lower lean mass, as in you could have a normal BMI but less muscle and more fat, right?
Yeah.
Or less bone density and more fat, and lower fitness in your cardiorespiratory system. So your breathing and your heart, your lungs and your heart could be unhealthy for other reasons, smoking or poor diet or lack of exercise and whatnot. So you know, like, again, that's kind of saying your BMI is not a judge of your fitness, right? And that's particularly true when people get older. And if you're obese, because obesity means you've got an increased risk of certain chronic diseases, you could get those earlier, and then they could be found earlier and be treated more aggressively. Do you know what I mean? So you could have you could basically catch things earlier if someone is obese, because, you know, there's a higher risk factor. They perhaps see their doctors more, or they present with the symptoms earlier. It goes on to say, obviously, what we said already, having more fat in your body means that you can take that kind of stress better, catabolic stress, as in, you know, not having enough energy coming in, sort of thing. There's also selection bias as well, because, and I'll just read this as a quote from Obesity or BMI Paradox, Beneath the Tip of the Iceberg, patients with obesity often present with comorbidities, and they undergo medical checkups more frequently, and consequently, all diseases associated with the obesity paradox may be diagnosed at earlier stages. And it's also interesting as well, I want to talk about a few other things that are kind of related here. For example, right, what these studies may not be looking at is, how old are the people that are dying, right? Mm. Are we looking at people that are, you know, if someone is obese and they've got a better life expectancy, are they like in their 20s or 30s or whatever, comparing them to people in their 50s or 60s?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And also, like, what is the increased risk factor? Like, if you've got a higher risk of getting sort of cardiovascular issues if you're obese, like, you know, like I said earlier, does that obesity increase your risk factor of that? And, you know, being obese, once you've got it, means that you kind of reduce your chances of dying from it.
But you're also more likely to have got it in the first place.
You're also more likely to have got it in the first place. Mm-hmm. Also, what about the obese people that have already died from other complications from other diseases earlier, so that the people that you know, have survived are the ones that are sort of
more likely to get the less likely stuff.
Yeah, that are more likely to get the less likely stuff, but also like are just like maybe slightly more resilient in other ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's so many other factors at play here, and just labeling what's been found as the obesity paradox because obesity is protective, it just doesn't add up. There's not enough there for it, right? Like until you have controlled for all of these variables that I've just mentioned, until you've controlled for all of this bias, for all of these eventualities, you cannot sit down and say that obesity has a protective effect. And it absolutely baffles me that scientists are saying obesity has a protective effect, because the obesity doesn't necessarily have a protective effect. People talk about, like,
you
know...
That wouldn't even be true, even if this was right.
Yeah.
It just means you're seeing a trend, a correlation. It doesn't mean that obesity has a protective effect.
Yeah. Correlation is not causation.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. So there's also the idea...
It always baffles me when people who are scientists, like, miss basic science things.
Right. Right. No. So many of these sort of papers can be quite sassy. Yeah. Just like... Yeah, like literally
call yourself a scientist.
One of my favorite ones, I think it might have been I can't remember the name of it, but it started off basically describing a situation, like, you know, say a young scientist were to do a study and then found something that was absolutely antithetical to, like, you know, previous knowledge. Now, what would that young scientist do? Would they then go ahead and do more studies to try and confirm and control for these extra variables that they weren't aware of? Would they look at their design, blah blah blah, or would they simply label a paradox and beyond? Like, that is how that paper
as quickly as possible.
That is how that paper started. And look, whether this is true or not, I don't. That's irrelevant to this one point I'm making, which is I love when scientists are just sassy and catty with each other in scientific papers. It's just like, as someone that has to read scientific papers so often, I love it. Oh yeah, give it to me. Give me that sass, science man. Thank you. So there's also what I kind of call comparing apples to oranges. I've kind of mentioned that, you know, if you're comparing a younger person with heart disease to an older person with heart disease, it's like, well, the younger person got the heart disease younger. They survived, but obesity has a protective effect, but if the person that's got the heart disease is younger, they have to live the rest of their life with the, you know, with the lasting implications of that. Is that really a protective effect when compared to someone who got heart disease later in life and then died from it?
That, you know, had a, I very mean? Nice, healthy life the whole rest of their
life. The rest of their life was like, they were, you know what I mean? Like, this is, it's so, there's so many issues here, like so many issues with the idea of the obesity paradox. And it's frustrating because to some extent I was like, it would have been nice if this person was right. Like, you know what I mean? Not that it would like absolutely like confirm my biases or blah, blah, blah. But like, that would have been good. That would have been like a nice, easy win. It would have been an interesting thing. It would have been something cool or interesting to talk about and to do further studies on, right? The obesity paradox, sure, we need further studies. But as it stands now, I don't think there is enough. There doesn't seem to be enough like supportive data to say that this is genuinely a paradox that exists. You know what I mean? It's just, it's ridiculous. Also, the timing issues, like when they're checking back up, like a 1-year follow-up, it might not be long enough for, you know, the issues associated with obesity to kill someone, right? Like, it, like, you know, it could, like, there's literally studies here. I mean, you can look and all, like, look in the references, please, for the love of God, look in the references, because I put them there every week. This one says, the median follow-up period of these studies, around 2 years, could have been too short to show negative effects of obesity, while undernutrition may have had a greater impact on mortality in a reduced period of time. In a study conducted by Nigam et al., comparing 3 different classes of BMI, different mortality risks were described for subjects with overweight or obesity in the short term compared to a longer period of observation. So essentially what they're saying there is, if you're underweight, you could die quicker from something. Mm. And if you're overweight, it could take you longer to die. But you could still die. And they're not, if you're not matching the ages or whatever, then you've got, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got issues with that. And I think the last problem with the obesity paradox I want to talk about is bloody BMI. Now, you might be wondering why I spent a good, like, maybe what, 20, 30 minutes chatting about why BMI doesn't work, why it's broken, why it's broken if we're using it as a tool to measure obesity. Yeah, so a lot of these studies use only BMI.
Oh.
So it could have been a bunch of really muscly people surviving lung cancer.
Well, it's just... But also there could have been people, like, it's just...
Just beating the cancer up.
Yeah, or it could have been, like you say, like, the people who are considered the healthy weight could have been really unmuscular, but have a lot of either internal fat or external fat, but not enough to be considered overweight or obese.
Yeah.
But they have no muscle whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah. BMI is just not, it's not a great indicator of body composition, which is probably going to have more of an effect in these issues, in these cases, than just simply your, like, overall weight.
Yeah.
And it just baffles me that people will publish that people will publish papers saying this, right? Yeah. Like, why would you do that? I don't understand why you would see this and not think, huh, maybe we should look a little bit further into this just to double check.
Because they thought it was their eureka moment. Yeah. They thought they were going to define their career.
Yeah, well, it defined their career. Their career as someone who just talks about a paradox without thinking about any any other explanation for it. And like, look, I mean, obesity could have these protective effects, right? But until we've checked these other factors, that's just like, it doesn't seem to be the case. Like, we can't really say that it does. Like, I don't really like that we're viewing this purely in terms of like, yes, these studies that we're not trying to look for this specific thing necessarily, we found this. And so this exists as a paradox, instead of like building a study from the ground up to look at it. Because if it is the case that obesity is protective in these certain instances, we then need to relook at our understanding of health and all of these sorts of things. And it's just, look, there are, I want to kind of tie a knot on this part of the discussion. Like, there are so many ways that one can be unhealthy, right? Obesity is one of those ways that one can be unhealthy, but you could be of a healthy weight and have other health conditions. And for all of the wokies that are watching this, I know you are. I know. Let me explain it to you in this way. Think of intersectionality, right? You can have multiple different identities. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you can be, just because you're a man, right? It doesn't mean that you're not oppressed. You could be a gay man. You're oppressed in a way for being gay. But you're not oppressed for being a man, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, there could also be a woman who is oppressed for being a woman, but she's straight and she's not oppressed for being, you know, she's not oppressed for being gay because she's straight. Kind of works the same way with obesity and healthy weights, right? Just because you say that like obesity is bad for your health, it doesn't mean that people that aren't obese are 100% perfectly healthy in all ways. It just means that they are unhealthy. They could be unhealthy in different ways, but the way that they are unhealthy is not like, you know, their weight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yes. Like the excess fat on their body. That is something that I feel like it's just not kind of discussed. It's like when we talk about, you know, weight not being a good indicator for health, or like the level of fat on the body not being a good indicator for health, that doesn't necessarily mean that having excess fat in your body is healthy. And alongside, you know, being like of a healthy weight is being healthy, it just means that if you're a healthy weight, it means that your weight is not going to be the issue that impacts your health. It's going to be other factors. And if you're overweight, your weight is going to be one of the factors that influences your health. Not necessarily all the time, but it's going to be one of the factors in some instances. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I think is the only way of,
The final takeaway.
Yeah, it's the final takeaway. Look, so just to summarize that, the obesity paradox is the idea that obesity can have a protective effect. It can help you survive certain diseases, you know, like certain cancers and whatnot, and certain heart diseases. Now, when you actually look into the numbers and the data and the studies on this, it kind of falls apart. So the obesity paradox doesn't really seem to exist. I'm not going to outright say that it absolutely doesn't exist. There are some protective effects, you know, of having excess weight in your body because you have more energy reserves and whatnot. But claiming that the obesity paradox exists and that the only reason that no one knows about it is because doctors and scientists are all incredibly fat phobic and they want to maintain the idea that obesity is unhealthy, there isn't the data to support that. There's barely even the data to support that the obesity paradox is a thing in and of itself, right? So more studies are needed, but until that time, nah, man, I don't think the obesity paradox is really a thing that we should be giving much time to, other than this, you know, hour and a half long podcast episode.
That's all the time you get.
Well, that's out of the way. Why don't we do a little quick fire quiz?
Dun 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 dun. Paradox edition.
So the rules for the quick fire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asks the question wins. What do they win, Jemp?
A paradox.
Gosh darn right. So, Luke.
Nothing.
What is your buzzer? Jamp, what is your buzzer?
Ooh.
So my question for you both is, how do you calculate BMI? Luke, what is the answer?
You take your flip. You take your... Oh, which way round is it? It is, you take your weight divided by your height divided by your height or divided by your height squared.
Yes. 100% yeah! Correct. Well done, Luke. Congratulations. And I think that's it for us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit. And also, thank you for listening. You've found the references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why don't leave us a nice wee review. You can support the pod at patreon.com/slideguys, or you can find a contact us at Sci Guys 1 on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at Sci Guys on TikTok too. Or you could send us an email at sciguyspod@gmail.com. You can follow me at Not Corey everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Yeah. Good. Bye.
So done.
Speed that up to 3 times speed.